Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We're your drunk A.
Sweeties.
Hey everyone, I'm Wah.
And I'm Chris, and welcome to DocuSweeties.
We're two longtime friends who discuss the riveting and sometimes trashy world of reality TV and docuseries.
Yes, but through our own lens, which in this situation is incredibly privileged and blessed over these people. But here we are talking about Love During Lockup, Season 5, Episode 24, Vegas or Bust. And don't worry, we'll make something sweet at the end of it. You know how we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I thought that this was a very telling episode. A lot of the families got to like reveal little secrets. And so it provided some human aspects and some hilarious aspects. So let's jump right into it. With our first couple is Tenny, who's 34, and Rob, who's 33.
Tennis.
Oh, yeah, tennis. And she is, okay, first of all, I noticed that it says that she's a stay-at-home mom, and I want to know how. I want all the details. How does she get to be a stay-at-home mom?
I also want to know that. So just, this is the saddest truth for me. We'll get through this thing, but obviously it ends with this conversation with Rob's mom. It cut out for me watching on the cable right when the mom is like, look what you drive. And then it goes to her. And I was like, yeah, let's talk about it. And then immediately my DVR was like, boop. Well, you're done watching that. And I was like, that was the best part of the episode. I'm really very upset.
That's not the end of what happened, though. Oh, God. My God. I hate when that happens on network television where they don't tell you that the episode, because it's their own network, unlike cable shows. It's because it's their own network. They don't have that hard out at the top of the hour or the 30 minute. They can go over 2-3 minutes and they will, but not tell your DVR that.
Yeah, they absolutely don't care about us.
Oh, it's the worst.
All I have to say, they don't really care about us.
Don't worry what people say. We know the truth.
Yeah. Okay, I can't wait to tell me what it is. So let's but going back. So in just because this is the reality they have, again, he just always has his phone, has access to the Ring cams. So they're working out together, and we're working out is, now I realize like, he is training her. They're obviously, to me, is in a Dobbs-sub relationship. Not again to just always bring that up, but to me, he's so dominant. She'll do whatever he wants. He's like, I'm going to train you. She's like, okay. You know, she shows up. It's a lot of stretches, a lot of stretching. And then what looks like an inconceivable amount of lunges, just as they have to talk. She's like, uh-huh, step back, uh-huh. Like, just that's what their workout is. At first, I'm like, this would make a lot more sense if like he also had her wear an Apple Watch and he had privy to the sharing of the thing. And maybe he would know her heart rate permitted and was like, okay, let's do a little hit. Let's get that heart rate up. But no, he's just basically just spending time with her and watching her move, you know, and like just disguises this as a workout routine they do 3 times a week. What did you think?
I thought it was sweet. Like he's trying to figure out ways to have alone time with her. And I don't think that they're a dom sub relationship. I think that she is just putting herself in a position to where he feels like he has all the power. A lot of the eye rolling and whatnot that she does, like it feels like she's just like, oh God, I have to do this, but I'll just do it to appease him because he's in prison and he doesn't have much power. And so I want to make him feel like it. But I imagine that when he gets to the house and actually starts telling her what to do, she's gonna be very annoyed. Like, I don't think that she is ready for what his presence, like physical presence, without being able to shut him off sometimes, is going to do to her. So
And the kids.
Yeah, I saw that as very interesting when she's like, oh, I don't want, the way she was doing everything as like not dom sub to me, girl, because she would hop too if it was. So we find out that he would really like for her to mend the bonds between her and his mother. And then it's over money. And so in my mind, the amount must have been in the thousands, right? And so she talks about how Rob asked her to give Kate, his mother, which is the first time we've ever had a black Kate on this show, the money. And then somehow Rob changed his mind. We're not sure what made Rob tell Tennis to ask for the money back from Kate. Tennis said she was uncomfortable with it, and I don't know why she did it, but she still did. And she asked this woman for the money back. And the woman, like, was fit to be tied, about to cuss her out. And in fact, did cuss her out. And they haven't spoken since in 4 years. And I am just very confused, like, this whole through line. And then he expects her to, like, make everything better. But I really feel like it's up to him to do that, because that's his mother. But we get a strange energy from Kate that lets us to believe that she feels ownership over her son. Now, let me tell you right now, I don't know what it's like to have a piece of you go into prison where you can't see them for 18 years. You don't get to see them grow. You don't get to see them become a man. You don't get to be able to see all of these milestones in their lives yet. And you want them to remain in stasis. You want them to remain who you thought they were from when the last time they were fully in your life. And that person doesn't. That person grows. That person does a bunch of different things while in prison, include a whole business with another one. I can only presume your son. Maybe not. Maybe it's his stepbrother or half brother from his father, but has a business. So, like, it's very interesting that Kate is not interested in Tennis at all. Not interested at Tennis at all. And only the way a jealous mother can be.
So, yes. Like, So during the workout, when we get this story, at first I'm like, okay, well, whose money was it? Was it Tennis's money that he was like, look, my mom needs 500, give it to her. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, okay. And so she gives it to her. And then he's like, you know what? Give me that money back. She doesn't need it. And then mm-hmm. Tennis is like, that's very fucking awkward. He's like, do it. And then, so she then sends a text, mm-hmm. but no, it makes it feel like when then we have a conversation with Kate that the money was Rob's, but for mm-hmm. some reason, Rob, who has, as we see, access to a phone at all times, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. could easily send a text. I mean, only too easily. Like, in my mind, I'm like, you know, if you've thought of this whole ring situation with Tennis, like, and that was working out for you, and I was in the clink, I'd be like, well, all of the people I want to see in their lives, you all get ring cams. You get a ring cam. You can a ring if you want to see me. Like, listen, this is a great, I mean, to me, I'm still astounded by the workings of this. And I think it's absolutely brilliant if you are in jail and you have access to this, and this is how you can, like, literally spend time with people in rooms with them. I mean, like, you know, we live in a Zoom world anyway. Like, I hate to say this, but how very different is his life with her? Like, if they were in COVID and just different houses, then, like, whatever. I mean, I know that he's in jail, but anyway, God bless. So in a way, he obviously hasn't set up the ring cams at his mom's house, you know, like, and then the money starts to become specifically obvious. Who has the money and why don't other people have the money? Tennis has the money because she's a, as you said, stay at home mom and has these kids, and they're all really well. Like, Tennis has money and been having money to the point where she is of the economic class that things are popping at, like, middle class or upper middle class, you know, or whatever they are. It's, you know, she's living. She looks great. Her kids are very happy, very well fed, very, like, they don't seem to want of anything except for some weekend time to spend with their friends. But then, yes, we get to then have this meeting with Kate. Now, when she gets into this restaurant with Kate, Kate's face is a whole situation. And Kate's like, well, it's been fucking 20 years. And then we remember, well, yeah, they dated in their high school days. So is Kate also mad at Tennis from what Tennis did at 14 and 15 in high school?
I don't know, girl. And they're such fish out of waters in this cafe. You're right. Like, where did they meet? Downtown, like the little cute, kitschy downtown of whatever little town she must live in with picket fences and a steepled church. Like, it's very interesting to me. It's mm-hmm. it's like when you mentioned that her kids are well fed, and also she is calm. She's a calm mother. She's not yelling at them. She seems to have a really good relationship with them. Like, it's very middle of yes. the America, like, you know, okay situation. And yeah, so she's like 20 years, and she's like, oh, not 20 years. Okay, weirdo, four. She's like, oh, well, a long time. And at this point, I now know I can't trust Kate.
That's why when she said 20, I'm like, has she hated this woman since high school?
Yeah. She, yes. I don't know.
Face is like, don't you fucking fuck with me. Tennis sits down and you can see Tennis like, oh shit, that's what I'm going to deal with. So I do love the fact that every moment Tennis is like, you know, Kate's like, I don't want to be here. And Tennis is like, oh no, obviously. No, it's incredibly obvious.
Oh, I don't want to be here either. Oh, really? Great.
Yeah, do you think I want to be here? I have two fucking kids in this cool car. We both could be anywhere else.
Yeah.
I could be anywhere else.
Matter of fact, check please. Like just... What are you talking about? She just really, it was the audacity for me. And then we find out that the money squabbles is only over $500.
But Kate, that's a and big...
I said to myself, Rob, if your mother is fighting over $500, then that means that you are not helping her. And she is upset about it. She is mad that Tennis has what she has because she feels like Rob gives it to her.
Yes.
And it may be true.
Yes.
And then she's like, okay, so while I'm at home suffering, taking care of my mother, taking care of my son's grandmother, you are reaping all the benefits. And while I have been suffering for 18 years and you've only not had him for five, you know, matter of fact, bleep would have treated me better. Bleep made sure that I always got money. And we were like, okay, so now Kate, the mother, introduces Rob's ex, whose name they bleep out. Okay, the ex won't even allow her name to be said on television, that they bleep her name out. And so then we're like, okay, so did you like Rob's ex better because Rob's ex would give you money and Tennis does not feel any obligation towards you? She's like, if my husband wants his mother to have money, he will give his mother money, which to me is what it should be. So then we want to know about bleep because we want to know if he's been in prison for 18 years, how is it that he's had a full other relationship with somebody else who the mother likes better?
Can I ask a quick question since I didn't watch this? We know for a fact that when she says, oh, bleep would have given this for me, we do know for a fact that it's the ex of Rob, as opposed to Rob's brother, who also has, she has another child, the golden child, and Rob's a bad one. Like it is about his ex and not like a brother of Rob who takes care of her more than Rob, right?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Cause again, I didn't see this one, make sure. To me, I want to know, what she says that she needed $500 at that moment for the mom. There's something about that I wonder if that's true. And then also, again, this is 100% something that Rob should have dealt with his mom. And then it reminds me, what is the secret, again, that Rob hasn't told Tenny? Because then, is the secret that he just wanted her to meet the mom? Because he's like, okay, again, episode one, he's like, I have the secret that she doesn't tell him when they go to visit. But then he's like, we're going to have a workout and I'm going to tell her the secret during the workout. And I think that the secret was you have to meet with Kate, which to me is like not a really big secret. Like,
not at all. I didn't even clock that as the secret. So once Bleep's name is mentioned, Tennis gets so upset, y'all. She looks at the camera immediately and she's like, we can cut right here.
Thank you.
And she gets up and she walks out and the camera crew is like struggling to chase after her. And Kate is like, come on, Tennis, don't be like that. Just come. Where are you going? And Tennis is like, my name and Bleep's name should never be spoken in the same sentence. I find that to be utterly and all encompassing disrespectful. So now we all want to know what Bleep has done to Tennis. What is it that's going on? Does Bleep have one of Rob's babies? Were they actually married so they could do like those kind of conjugal visits? Like, give us the tea. So we're on the cusp of getting more information and I hope that we'll get it next episode and they won't just like let string us along.
Okay. So Rob has money. Sorry, before you move on, I just want this. So what we're saying is Rob has a business in jail where he's making a lot of money. And he's giving money to Tennis. And so is he the reason why she's a stay-at-home mom? Or does she have him and then various other like gentlemen that have maybe like helped her birth those babies and therefore they have to pay for her and the babies still?
My assumption is that she is getting child support, but that also Rob is submitting the rest of the like the rest of it, unless she's a stay-at-home mom slash work from home mom.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if if Rob is behind the jail, a huge drug kingpin. You can tell how much I know about this. Drug kingpin in jail. That means that not only do the jail guards either know or not know about that, they're still giving him every fucking, you know, like lax play in the book to give, you know, for him to have this phone at all times. Like all of it is so, I love, you know what a great story. This is great. I mean, these are great people. And Kate is so upset. And you just like, once she sat down with that face, I was really happy about it. I know that they're going to probably show parts of this the top of the next episode, because, you know, like that's how they bookmarked it. So at least I'll see some parts, but I mean, it was a great unfolding of events that just like give us more questions than answers, which is what I want. You know, it's because it's only episode two. So this is like, if you are doing exposition on any other scripted show, this is a perfect scene where we're now like, wait, what? Oh, how? You're right. She does have a nice car, Kate. But also Kate, honey, like, what do you expect? But also 100%. This is a conversation between you and your son. And it is annoying as females that Kate is putting the misplaced blame on other females and not her, like, let's be honest, fucked up son for he's in jail for a reason for that long. And he's not giving the money. That's the fucked up part. So like, it is a little bit like deal with your son. You know, I wanted her to also be like, deal with your son. Anyway, so let's move on. I know you wanted to, but I just wanted to like get that out. Do you want to move on to Joey and Michael?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So here we are with Joey and Michael. And it also starts with working out. Honey, it's a theme, you know, like,
yeah,
get that body right.
Yeah, yeah.
He's working out with a trainer to not be flabby, you know, and then, later on he talks to Michael, as we all do, you know, and they get to FaceTime. Everyone's talking and they talk about body counts. Now he's like, you know, Michael, how many people have you been with? Or I'm like, you've never asked him this question. This is wild. And then Michael's like, well, in prison and out of prison. And I love, first of all, I was like, well, both, you know, great. So in prison, he's like, well, let's just see Christopher, Kyle, there was Matt, there was Enon. And it's like, you know, like, I hate to say this, but as a watcher of this, it is certainly my favorite, one of my favorite parts when they get to talk about sexuality in prison, you know, like sexual relations in prison. I like if it's men or women, like I like to know like how it's going down, you know, like it's, you know, this is a great situation because Michael is a top, an openly gay male. And so you don't get to see a lot of mask openly gay males in my mind and all the prison documentaries I've like watched or whatever, like obviously it's very obvious, my loves, like when you see a gents that like is a definite bottom, you know, bottoming it up, you know, and like being passed. And you're just
did
like,
you watch Oz?
No, but I started to watch Unlocked.
Oz had that. Oz definitely gave us masculine tops.
Oh,
Christopher Maloney.
really?
Wait, was it Christopher Stabler? Yes.
Stabler?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, like,
yeah.
I mean, I know it exists, obviously. I'm not like the dumbest, you know, but yeah, like, you don't get to see. I mean, yeah.
So, yeah, it was very, very Oz actually absolutely gave us that. So, I mean, I just love the fact that he's like, I gotta buff up before Michael sees me because I don't want to be all flabby. And we know that it's going to take more than the four pumps of iron that we saw him do in order for that to happen with him. Mm-hmm. And then the body count conversation, I hate that conversation. Now, I think it's important because we know that Michael has been pimping all over the world and he has definitely a dirty dick. So I think it's important for at least them to get tested, but there is literally no reason to know the amount. Cause isn't it just going to make you grossed out? I mean, cause like he's making it seem like, well, yeah, I know a lot, because he understands that they're like, I imagine that these two are in this like meth world of drugs and like random sex with men and partying and threesomes and fivesomes. And so it's just like very crazy that Joey would ask as though Michael even counts or even would have an inkling. Like,
well, yes,
it's more than Sarper.
I love you easily. But like, yeah, Joey's like, well, none this time, right? When he's in prison. And it's like, no, Joey, of course he's of fucking course. People. What is, like, I haven't even met Michael. I have not met Michael. And I don't even have to, like, meet him to know that he is fucking someone below the screen right now. Right now, as you talk to him, Joey, as you see his face, there is a person sucking his dick. Are you insane? It's you crazy. Don't know that? How do you not know that?
It's crazy.
I mean, you know, so that's, it's, then this starts to get like a, when we first meet him, we thought maybe they were just a longtime friends, that Joey knew who this Michael was. And so some parts of this, I'm like, you do not know who this Michael is. Like, you don't, then that gets crazy. So then, yes.
Let's talk about the photo.
Do you have a picture of it?
No, I don't, but let's just talk about it. I mean, we're
not okay. Well, I do have a picture of it. Okay, go on.
So the photo that they have where he has to show that they had prior dealings before going into prison. Now, mind you, Joey met Michael while he was on his way to prison. Now, at first glance, I would not think anything of that. I would be like, they're at different events. Like, why are you wearing a t-shirt and he's wearing a suit, a shirt and tie? But it is so obviously bad. It's like Joey did not put any real effort. He didn't Google or try to get help from an online friend or anyone in his network to be like, hey, who knows how to do Photoshop? And then like didn't do anything to do that. He just did it himself. And I know he almost had to pay for some service. If you're going to pay for the service, kick in a little $50 to have some like college kid do it for you.
I'm going to tell you this right now. What is the worst? One of the worst parts is A, that they're, it's like, first of all, Michael looks like he's orange. Second thing is Michael's shoulder just disappears in front of Joey. Joey put himself back, Michael's picture in front, and then Michael's shoulder just is chopped off, honey. I mean, like, they know that he has one. It's gone. So, I mean, you know, he should have put Michael behind him and have his shoulder block that. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to Photoshop, I guess, in Canva. But yeah, even Michael's like, yeah, I saw that, didn't work. But
8 months until Michael's release, and we find out that he is basically used to being in prison because he has been there 4 different times. That it's going to be awkward between the family and whatnot. So we have like the prep for that. So the family all gets together, and this is a family of addicts, unfortunately, but the good thing is that they're so upfront with it and honest with it, so that while we're watching it, we understand the context. But it's like the brother, Todd or Toby, then you've got the sister, Tammy, there. The dad says that his mother and brothers died of addiction related illnesses and deaths. And that is super califragilistic. The dad has been on his sober journey for 35 years. The brother, Toby, a little less. And so they're sitting around a folded table in the living room on folded chairs with pre-heat food or like takeout. Okay. Everybody does it a little different. So they got the takeout. They're all eating, having a great time with their salads and what looks like meatloaf. And the dad's like, I really don't think that two addicts should be together, but whatever. So they do the video call with Michael, and the brother Toby wants to know if he could like give him the third degree. And everyone's like, we don't have enough time for all that shit. Like, just calm down, right? We get you on TV, but calm down, Todd, Toby. And so he puts up his little stand with his video, and we find some key things out about Michael. One, we find out that we reiterate that Michael has been in the service and the dad loves that. So we reiterate that love. Two, that Michael never had a dad and kind of wants to look at Joey's dad as a dad, which is a red flag.
It absolutely is. They had met on Grindr. And by the way, I just heard about
on Grindr. Oh, yeah. Grindr, Toby. Yeah, Grindr. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah. Met online, Grindr. Yeah, no, of course. If you met online, it's Grindr. Grindr, by the way, this is just like side note. This is the news is. So on Grindr, obviously it's a gay app or whatever. You can put your HIV status, you know, so that people know, and which is upfront, but Grindr was selling that information to third party situations. So now, yeah, the big news story is that people's HIV statuses and whatever else was on the profile, but obviously this is the one that could be detrimental for people, is out and about as a data leak for people, which is
horrendous.
Horrendous. Now, obviously, it's wild and great, the spectrum shift of how society has looked at like HIV positive people, because of the fact that like it's not just a gay disease, and we know this because of like Magic Johnson, all this stuff situations, but also as like time has moved on, we have such better medications for it and stuff like that. Like, you know, the 80s from 1980s to like, you know, 2020s is like the history of this disease has like, you know, been very, very troubled in the past. And like now people like live a long time. And so it's not, you know, it's not as detrimental for their like, for their own lives to, for that to be known, but still it's literally a HEPA thing. You can't even believe that people would know that, you know, like any other STD that you might have or whatever. So that's just a small thing I just want to talk about, which is like so sad for people. And I just want to like give that out anyway. So in this that's conversation, crazy. They're talking with Michael, and this is the part I need to ask a question about because I just want to know this. Okay. So they are talking and it's revealed that Joey had a relapse with Michael before Michael went back to prison. Now, mm-hmm. when he starts telling the story, it very much feels like him and Michael procured drugs, went to a hotel, did the drugs. Joey later felt really bad about himself. And Michael was like, don't worry about it. This is just, you know, a blip on the journey for you. And so it made it like, I was like, wait, Michael was the one that did the drugs with him 10 hours beforehand, knowing everything they did.
Who knows if he knew? That's what I'm thinking now, because the way it's explained, the only way that I could make sense of this is maybe when Joey was feeling guilty, he confessed to Michael like, hey, I've actually been 12 years sober of meth. Like I had a really bad addiction and I don't know why I was here and I did this with you. What happened is that he was feeling lonely and sad and upset and by himself and isolated and all these things that he was telling his family that he was feeling. And they were so crushed when they heard how he was feeling. And so he went on Grindr, found Michael, then like had like a weekend bender with him or some shit, fucked him, had a great time. And then at the end of it, confessed to Michael that that's what happened, that this is what's going on and that he's 12 years sober and such and such and such. And so then Michael like hugged him and then they left the motel together, immediately was arrested, you know, surrounded by cops.
Yeah.
And immediately arrested and carted off. And so Joey's like, he's the person who told me I was okay. As Michael is being just like taken away to prison. That's the only way I can make sense of it. I've been thinking about it for a while.
Yeah, because then when he tells a story, he's like, wait, Michael was there doing drugs with you. Michael's not your saving angel that mm-hmm. like was like Joey's like, then he saved me. He's like, no, motherfucker. He almost killed you again. Now this you hear. You hear the story, you see his family's faces just start crying. But like, this is a very interesting part because a lot of them are former addicts. I don't know that life, but I again just sat here and was like, if this was me and my family, if I sat here at a table with my dad, my Uncle Billy, you know, like my siblings, which are my cousins, all of them, they knew my history, knew the history of the family. If my secret came out about this, I would have people yelling at me.
Oh my God.
I would have people standing up, screaming, being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why would you want to be? You cannot be with this person. You are not allowed to be with an ex-addict, you asshole. You are an addict. You are an addict. And so there's a couple of things in your life you are not allowed to do anymore. You cannot hang with other fucking addicts. It's a known thing that if you have a problem with drugs, then you fucking can't put yourself in situations with fucking addicts. And this guy has been in prison 4 goddamn times for drugs. So what is wrong with you? Like, my people would be like, what is wrong with you, you stupid bitch? Like, they would be like, did you not go, how are you even allowed to sit here and look at us and think we are not going to lock you up? We know something's wrong with you. The fact that you would make these choices makes us realize that you are not to be trusted. Put you in a goddamn padded cell because you cannot be with this fucking drug felon. Are you insane?
I just cannot imagine your dad and Uncle Billy calling you a fucking stupid bitch.
No, that would be like Nicole or Monique. Like, they'd be like, okay, you fucking stupid bitch!
I don't want you to know that. The story you painted for us, it was just your dad and Uncle Billy. Okay?
No, I saw my cousins. I saw all of them.
You needed to say the name so that we could put it into perspective. We got very specific dad and Uncle
Monique
Billy. And
I'm like, I just feel like people would be like, They would not like these.
Yeah, white but I people, think what's different
white
is
white Italians sit there or whatever they are, just sit there and cry softly in front of them. I could not. I was like crying softly. I could not. I was like, no one says anything. The sister is full of rage. Like, I can't believe this is happening. And it's like, I cannot believe no one is yelling.
Yeah, I just, here's what I think is going on. This is the what love and compassion for your child looks like. And maybe they're doing it right. Like, maybe they're not telling him not to go with Michael because A, he's a grown ass man, and B, like, they just got to let go and let God, like, you know, what is the mantra of the AA? It's like, handle things that
God
you can.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So they're, yes, you're right. Their whole family.
I mean, how do you know that? How do you know that?
It's the serenity prayer. So it was.
Oh, it's from the Bible. Okay, great. Okay. I was like, what? How do you know that?
I don't know if it's from the Bible, but it's definitely a Catholic thing I had to like learn that suddenly I was like, oh, you guys use this too? Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's what it is. And I was like, wow, I just looked at it and I was like, this is so different than what it would be if it were me. My dad yells at me and I'm not even asking him anything bad. Like, I'm like, hey dad, I have this propane tank and I don't want it anymore. What do I do? Take it to Home Depot. Okay. I took it to Home Depot and they said, no, what? You just take it to Home Depot. Dad, I don't know if you just heard me.
No.
But they said no when I went to them. Where can I take it now? You can take it anywhere. I mean, you can take it anywhere. Keep it. Why don't you want to keep it? Okay, Dad. I don't like. All of a sudden, it becomes this like thing. I can't even imagine telling the man something that I had actually done that could ruin my life. I just can't imagine.
Could you imagine like 7 months ago? I almost died a bunch of times that you've seen. And then I almost had it happen again with this guy. Anyway, I hope you like the guy though. Like I feel like,
happen.
I don't even know what to do. Like, I don't want to say this in my family, but like, I feel like that person would end up dead.
I don't know.
My family would somehow find a way to kill that person. And then it's like, sorry, Chris. Well, that one's gone.
You need to worry about it anymore. They're like, the needle kind. And he's like, yeah, the needle kind. And I'm like, what's the needle kind? Heroin.
Yeah, because you smoke. Don't you smoke?
I don't know. Don't ask me anything. I don't know about it. I don't know.
You said meth before, and I think that it's all the things. You know, at some point, it's all opium. Whatever, like, you know, they make a bunch of things from the poppy flower. And then.
I just don't know. I do not know. So then they get upset at him for putting $50 a week on his books. And I'm like, it's only $200 a month. And the family's like, you can't afford that. And I'm like, oh, wow, Joey, you can't afford that?
Well, he lives with his parents. So his parents are like, can't you use that for Brent to get the fuck out? Yeah. And they're like, well, you know what he's doing with it? Well, let's just think about what he's doing with it. And like, Joey's like, ramen. He's buying ramen. And they're like,
yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah, no. He's buying sexual favors. And he's buying drugs.
He's buying drugs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't probably, he's a top honey in prison. So like, you know, I don't know if he's hot. I don't know if he has to buy them.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but the family just handled it in a very interesting and sentimental way. And I love that for them. I love that for Joey.
Well,
yelling at him is not going to get what they want. So, you know, it's just another side of the coin.
I guess I know. I'm just be honest before I say this. I'm going to give the grace and compassion that I've never had to deal with. To addiction like this, nor does anyone. So I can't, these people have, and so they're doing the thing that they are doing, but it's incredibly devastating because it does feel like, why is no one, at least calmly, fine, don't yell. No one being like, hey, Joey. Hey.
You fucking bitch.
You. Don't be a fucking bitch. But you obviously can't be with this person because the one thing that you have to do for yourself to maintain your sobriety is not be around people who are not sober. And sure as hell, this person isn't sober. So you have a choice. Like, I'd be like, buddy, you have a fucking choice. You either can like make a healthy road for yourself, continue living here, not be a goddamn drug addict that ruins your life, or not. But you are definitely choosing the not right now. And we're not going to sit around and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You live with us.
Mm-hmm.
We love you. Look at your family. Like, as much as you want to say you have nothing going for you and you are depressed and like there's no one for you, you're definitely sitting at a table full of a bunch of people who have your exact same face with tears in their eyes. So at some point, you have to wake the fuck up and get out of your own way and see what you have, because a lot of addicts don't have this. You have a place to stay. You have people that care about you, and you don't see it. And that's the problem.
Boise, Idaho must be popping, though, because for Michael just to be nestled in the meth, you know, the meth world of Boise, Idaho is very interesting. Now, let's move on to Shanta and True. They say Shantae, and I don't see it. I don't see it. So Shantae, I don't know.
Shantae, you stay?
That's what they're saying her name is, but they wrote Shanta.
Yeah,
but it's spelled Shanta.
Shantae, you stay.
I need an E, a Y. I need
Shantae. Shanta. Can we call her Shantae Shanta?
We can call her whatever you want to call her. I just, okay. It's Reed Shanta. She's 35 and True is 31. I wonder if that's his real name. So we find out some very important things. One, she has incredibly low self-esteem. Two, she knows how to cook really well.
Yo, I mean, the minute you saw that army pot, like, you know, that like, I don't know why I call it an army pot. It's just like my grandmother had four boys, right? And so like she had those kinds of pots. Also, she was in the army, but like it's the kind of pot where you're like, oh, you are making food for the mass hungry masses, you know? Mm-hmm, it's like, you know, but yeah, she is boiling. It's a crab lobster boil. I'm not quite sure. It's like one of those fishes, you know, with the hard tentacles or whatever. I'm not quite sure. I don't understand fish, but like, you know, it's the boil where you put just a bunch of tin foil out and you have like crisp corn, you have the potatoes, and then you have it all, you just lay it all out. And it's just the messiest thing. It's like, you know, yeah, it's like, yeah. I mean, you can tell that like, she knows what she's doing. She's so comfortable back there, you know, like her family's so excited to eat this food. They all sit down. And yeah, this is, this kind of feels a little bit like, from Love in Paradise, when we get to have the family sit down and then talk about things really openly, more even than you would think they would, you know, be open.
Yeah. And it was really great advice. So it's a great advice over a crab boil is what it's called.
Thank you, crab. I was like,
a great time over that. And then before though, she's on the phone with him and he's like talking shit low key about her cooking. And so we find out that she wants to open a restaurant with him, I think. And she actually believes his possible lies about cooking. So there's that. So she's worried that her family is not going to agree with her choices, especially because she has having a housewarming party because she's moved to Missouri to be with him. So when he paroles, he's going to have to be in Missouri for at least a year. And she was like, I'll just buy a house in Missouri. And I said, okay, boss bitch, you go ahead and buy another house. So he's talking to her because he's getting out in a month. And he's like, yo, when we get together, we're going to have sex for 7 days straight. That sounds very taxing on one's inner thighs. You know what I mean? Like the hip flexors, all of that just sounds very, very taxing. So he's been in jail for 12 and a half years for robbery. The cameras are fully allowed to visit him and set up shop and do an interview with him, which again, I like these people who have the freedom to be able to talk to the cameras directly. I think it's a fun part of the journey. And I love that everybody's getting out of prison in like a month. So either so much shenanigans is going to occur in like a month or a couple of months until they get out, or we're going to see them get out for a day or two, because Candace feels like she's getting out any second. It's like episode 3 and that bitch is going to be out. So I am here for it.
When we talked about that, that was weird too. I was like, is she coming out right now? But anyway, it's like, why are you? Okay.
I absolutely love that. Okay. So the cameras sit down with him and he's like, so what's up? Like, he is ready for this. I mean, he's shaved this part of his head, his dreads start halfway back, which must be a new thing that's happening somewhere in the world. And he's picked it up. And so it was just like, he's like, listen, I'm gonna be honest with you. I've never actually seen her in person. She's embarrassed. And he's like, I think of her pictures as the same way you would think of anybody online. So he's already prepared for her to not be pretty. he's like, listen, like people are going ahead and like show the best versions of themselves, or he's okay with it. He says that she really calms him down. She really like helps him to get to another place in his life. And I'm like, that's all the criteria that someone needs to have in order to, I mean, I don't want somebody in prison. So maybe it's just low bar because of that
part.
But she says that she spent $20K on him thus far, $30K.
Yeah, that part. I'm glad you wrote these notes, because in this conversation, I was also, I don't know. I mean, like, I swear to God, I watched this and I don't know why this whole podcast. I'm like, I'm confused about this. I'm confused about that. But then some part of this, yeah, she wants to meet him. She's like embarrassed about the way she looks, but then she like lets it be known that he told her that he's only dated white women.
Or not black girls. I don't know what exactly it is. Just like not black girls. And he's told that. And I was like, you. Okay. She's not. I can't say what I want to say. What I want to say is incredibly rude and mean. So I'm not going to say it. But for you guys who know what I'm talking about, I just don't feel like if you're going to start dating black women again, Shanta should be the first person you do.
Well, I mean, I just want to know like what white women he's dated, because he's been in prison for a long time. Was it other people that he met online? You know, like, was it other, you know, or whatever? They met through the fact that they were talking. She was like in the car with someone, and then he called, and then she started talking, and they were like, oh, they're interesting. And then she saw a picture of him and she's like, absolutely not. Then they showed him another picture and she's like, oh, you know, like, okay.
Yeah.
And then we cut to this, but yeah, like, yeah, he has said that. And then she feels like it's the type of way, which is like, that's fucking very sketchy. And then she tells her kin and they're all like, what?
Yeah. And the kin is like, is he to be trusted? Is he just dating? Like, why is he dating her if he doesn't like black women? Why doesn't he date black women? Because they're ghetto and da da da. And I thought to myself, the audacity of True to even say that out of his lips on national television. You think that that's a, you think that that's like a praise or a good thing?
Did True say on national television, or did they bring, they, she brought it up, right?
I remember him saying something like, she's the first black woman or something. He says he's outside and okay. He's wearing that white shirt. I just have a like memory of it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is not a narrative in which you should even tell anybody. You should be embarrassed and ashamed of yourself as a black person saying that it's not the flex you think it is. That's what it is. It's not the flex you think it is. And it just, it's really like, ugh. But I love the fact, first of all, none of her nieces got their hair redone to be on the show. And I was really disappointed in that. I said, okay, y'all not going to even redo the front? How much notice did you have? You could have redone the front. But they gave some great advice nonetheless. They were like, we just don't want our auntie to jump into something just because of everything that he's saying and it not actually be. She's got to think with more of her head than her heart. Things like that, because I could easily see him coming out and doing her just like Red did Joinomi.
He is.
He's going to do that. And it's just like really, really, really hard to kind of watch this happen after she sunk so much money. I mean, she even says something that's another red flag and crazy too, that he used her son in order to propose. So the kids are involved, and that it was a good thing. Like the son is the next best choice because she never had a father. So that's like the next best choice is her son. And I'm like, damn, like sometimes watching this show, I'd be like, what's up with black women and their sons? Because sometimes it really blurs lines of inappropriate and not in like, and like just a child should be able to be a child.
And the emotional dependence, right?
Yeah, the emotional dependency on a child should be able to be a child. Like there is no way that you shouldn't be telling your son because you made choices to get pregnant or have a child. And I'm saying this and this is not representing DocuSudies or Chris's opinions. But for me personally, you made a choice to have a baby with somebody who didn't give you, or maybe they fully tricked you. I don't know. But they're not in their lives right now. And now you put that like responsibility on the son, your son, to be the man of the house and to like emotionally support you and then maybe give you money once they get married, like just a lot of shit. And it's specifically in this show that we see a lot of that behavior. And maybe we see it from other races too, girl. I don't know. I'm just paying attention to the Black people. So don't nobody come to me with like, oh, it happens in every community. I'm talking about my community because that's what I see and that's what I'm noticing. And I just don't like it. I don't like that the son was involved in that. And she thinks that it was a good fucking idea.
I completely see your point. And then I will say, yeah, like I'm someone who knows what it's like to be parentified by my mom. You know, like my mom would love me to have like be an emotional fulfillment for her in a lot of ways. So it's very different the way when moms do it to daughters, it happens all the time. I think that's the same thing of like cool mom. Every time you see a mom that's like, we're more of a friend, that is a woman who is choosing to parentify her child because your child cannot be your friend. Your child is not your friend. I'm not saying you don't have like a loving relationship, but that's not your friend. You have friends that are your peers. And so, yeah, I see it so much with mothers and daughters that it's like, that's what makes me, you know, recoil in fear. So
yeah,
I can really give that other, I can really give that other side. I see it all the time.
What do you have to say about the eyelashes around the crab boil table?
No, I mean, I was like, those are going to end up in those crabs, honey. I mean, they are strip lashes. They're obviously not extensions. There's no way that those can be extensions. Like it would, like, I think they're strips and they were the fluffiest, biggest, thinnest. I mean, they're thin actual lashes that are so long and so curly. It's just like, it's interesting how the female form in the past 10 years has been like pushed to cartoon levels in order to, I feel like, be seen. Like, you know, it became a thing where women's butts had to be the biggest possible with their waists the smallest possible. You know, like women's noses have to be the smallest possible and their eyes the biggest possible. Like everyone's turning into anime characters. So it does feel like I think that it's really great to, I guess, lean back into like what is real? What is the human experience? And I think that as we are in the age of AI and automated situations, I am now increasingly turned on by what feels human and everything that doesn't, everything that feels like it's being at something or trying to be something heightened that is if humanity is not good enough and we're not like grounded in that, everything that makes me upset is this like insincerity, the over the top, the things that don't feel like it was a choice made from the inner part, but to be something that they saw. Like having said that, I don't like those eyelashes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Let's bring it back to those eyelashes.
I know. I don't like those eyelashes. Okay. I don't like the eyelashes. I don't like anything. I don't like the long claws. You know, I think that I'm like, let's get back to what we do here. And it's human shit. You know, like I have eyelash extensions right on right now, you know, but so I'm no saint here, but yeah, those eyelashes were a little fucking too much, but I get the culture. I get the space is different, but like,
okay.
Come on, peeps.
Let's move on to Handy and Brittany. I mean, Andrew and Candace, listen, it's the same person, Andrew, Andy, I mean, it's the same person. So this,
I can't stand this part so fucking much.
It's like, I got to get Candace's stuff ready. And then we just get a checklist. It's like Louis bag.
Nope. Sorry.
Louis bag.
Flouy. Latant. I mean, I cannot with this. Go on. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Chanel sunglasses. And I was like,
Ronell.
Yeah. Okay, Linnell sunglasses, a Apple Watch or a Bapple Watch, makeup, a wallet, a chain, a phone. And they're just like, ching, 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 showing us all the prices of all these different things. And
all of it a lie.
All he goes
to close it. Fuck you, Matt Sharp. We know we're not dumb.
The canvas tab just like breaks off. And I'm like, it's not even that. That's not even the zipper for that. It's not that tab. That's the wrong tab pull for that piece of hardware. And so I just like, wow, that's crazy. He breaks it and then he's like, oh, ho, ho. So then they get into the car or he sets everything up in the car in his truck. And he's like, yeah, we're about to go on a 3-day journey. And I'm like, I forgot where he was going.
Anyone, just so sorry. I cannot imagine a world in which, just, you know, when you buy, like, you
imagine
know.
Imagine a world. Remember when all movies just start like that? Imagine a world.
You just got me the most beautiful bag and shoes. Each one of them in its little dust cloth. Could you imagine a world in which you had bought me that bag, took the dust cloth, took the box out, opened it up, took all the stuffing out, and then put the shoes in and, you know, like, and then zippered up the bag and was like, I mean, no one who buys items that are well made. Yeah. There's no, as females, we know, like, there's no realm in which a Louis Vuitton bag would just be taken out of its dust or cloth, taken out of its beautiful box, and then inserted all the shit in there and then been given that way. It's just, every part of it was bananas. When he breaks it, I'm like, the breaking of the thing is chef's kiss. What makes me upset only is that Matt Sharp decided to give us all the chyrons of the fake things where it's like, who are you trying to pretend? Like, you should have put absolutely $1,500 for that Louis bag, which should be more, cross it out and be like, just kidding, DHL, $20. You know, like, at least play along with us. Don't pretend that we...
Someone got him for at least $500. You know what I'm saying?
What?
Like, someone got him for $500. He bought that bag for $500 thinking that it was a real thing because it was $500 and that's expensive to him. So I do think that he paid money for all of these items because he is a fool. So, like, you know what I mean? So he's loading up the truck and he's like, is there anything you want? And she's like, yeah, side of the road stuff. I really like that. And I didn't know what she was talking about. I thought
snacks.
I thought like eggs, like fresh eggs and berries. I thought like blueberry stands. I thought some beef jerky.
Yeah, I was like, so Ruffles, sour cream and cheese chips.
I didn't know what she was talking about when this man got off and just like in every Oklahoma, Arizona, and all native stuff, which I love. Like, good for that. And then the communities of this fool driving through spending $230 on a salt and pepper shaker. But I mean, what audacity. This man is already filling your home with so much shit, spending $600 to drive across the country, and you have the audacity to tell him to buy little tchotchke items and stuff along the way because you really like that. And then at the end, she gives some sad sob story foreshadowing the fact that she's about to dump him as soon as she gets with him because she could already see her empathic shenanigans coming forth and causing her to run away. But anyways, before we get there, we find out that Candace has been married twice, but she didn't say divorced twice. So now I don't know if she was divorced from the second husband. And she has one son from the first. And we find out that the first husband has discretionary choice of whether or not she could see that child, which is great because it sounds like she shouldn't be able to see any in her children. I wish that Britney's kids had somebody to watch out for them in that manner. And so she then says, hey, like, this is all along the 3-day ride. We get like a little montage of driving places. And she's like, hey, do you think that you can consider maybe instead of us and me or you living in New Jersey, you might be able to consider Nevada instead? And now he's like, kind of like mind blown a little bit. But, you know, as these people do, they're not going to let that glaring red flag stop them. He's like, it kind of made me feel some way that she said that because she said that she was willing to relocate in her application. I mean, her profile. So I don't quite understand where that's coming from. She has it in writing that she was willing to relocate. And like, now I know the argument is going to be like, yeah, I said that, but I relocate before, like after I get permission to have my son anytime I want.
She can use his son. Yeah, she can use his child to stay there, of course.
Yeah, I want you to buy a house, sell your house in New Jersey, buy a house in Nevada. Lickety split, so easy. So that possibly, just think about it. I mean, just like, look at some houses. I'm just saying, don't buy anything. I'm just saying, look. And so he pretends like he didn't hear any of that and like puts that to the side. And he gets to the prison and starts honking the horn outside so that she could possibly hear to get her in trouble. And it's just like, it's shenanigans. But the thing that's crazy is what she talks about at the end. Chris, I'll let you.
No, okay. Set it up. So you're sorry. The way you set it up, you had to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, you just set up something. I don't know what you were saying. Go ahead.
No, he's at the place and he honked the horns 3 times. That's where I ended.
Okay. Well, I'm so sorry. I had a whole, I know, because I feel, the only reason I'm saying this
or is say whatever you want. I'm done talking. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I thought you wanted to say something. I'm sorry. All I was going to say, which is different, which is it's reminded me of Melissa and Louie.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what happened. He got in trouble.
Yeah. Where you're just like, I'm here. Can you feel me? And like, you know, like that's like Melissa being like, I'm here. Like, look outside. And Louie's like, you know, like it's like that moment, I guess, is what I was only thinking. Okay, are you done? Are you done with them, I mean? What an awkward thing. I'm so sorry. I feel like I really thought that you had something that you wanted. You said like, and then she says at the end, but I don't know what you want. I don't know exactly what you're talking about there. Was there something else? There was nothing else about them you wanted to say? Or last
moment? At the end, she says that she's an empath and he asks her, are you getting anxiety or some shit? And like, then she's like, well, yeah. Don't ask me you asking me if I have anxiety is giving me anxiety. And I was like, okay, man, just hang up the phone then. She's going to just ruin his life. And then she says, well, I feel bad because what if I make him feel rejected, which I know is one of his biggest insecurities. So what if I do that though? Which means it's obvious that she has a plan that might happen because of all the things that she actually wants to do versus what it is that he believes is going to happen. Now, I don't understand the expectation. Is the expectation that she's just going to live in that apartment by herself and he's just going to go back to New Jersey and they're going to have a long distance relationship?
Great point. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's so interesting. You know, he's really thought so little about it, except that he just is bleeding money, you know? And she's just like, I don't know what to do because he keeps bleeding money, but I'm just going to have to cut it off at some point. And we'll see how that works out is basically what I'm hearing from her. Yeah. Messy. All right. On to our last, honey, Ayana and Jamal. So we get to see Ayana's incredibly adorable little girl. I mean, like, you know, which is making me upset every time I see. Everything is like shot of her. This is like joyous baby. And I'm like, oh my God, please just protect this baby and all your choices. Just make sure that your choice at first is like, how would I protect my baby first? Protect this baby. And so this baby can grow happy. Just like, you know, how your mom, I guess, protected you and wanted to have the best for you, you know, and she talks about that. But in every choice, she's like, okay, baby, I'm going to talk to this Jamal character for a hot ass second. And she's living the consequences of already the bad choices she's made. And for some reason, as her like little girl runs around, she's like, I'm going to phone with Jamal. It was just already a bad choice. Basically, she has to go to anger management because of the fact that we know that she's had 2 DUIs as well as an aggravated like assault charge because she decided to beat her best friend, who is also Jamal's ex, on camera. So now she's decided to go to like a social worker's house for therapy. Now, the social worker just rolled out of bed for this session, honey, rolled out of bed, didn't comb her hair, not nothing. But that's her choice. You know, I'm just like, oh, you know, but it's interesting because, you know, Ayana to me just met this person. Like they don't know each other. Obviously they sit down like, hey, tell me your story. And Ayana tells her story and it is incredibly honest and vulnerable. And in this moment, I just thought to myself, if she had a pattern of being able to have these sessions already, to have this moment where she's able to connect the trauma of her childhood to the choices that she's made and have someone who she respects that has discernment and wisdom give her the strength to like do this, I just think to myself, like, in this moment, she is seeing the choices and she's crying or whatever. And I'm just like, how do we live in this? Like how, I'm so happy that she's open and vulnerable to this, that I just like, how do we continue on this being the work? And I need someone to shake people sometimes and be like, I'll tell you what's not the fucking work. I'll tell you what's going to bring you back, Jamal, which is just like with Joey, I need someone to be like, this is like, as human beings, this is how we need our culture and our community, our kin. We need whatever it takes to be like, please stay here. Please stay here in this like wise mind where you know where you are, where you have the compassion of where you are because of your space, because you know you can move forward. Please, please have the discernment to be like, this person will take me back. And that is what Jamal is. And that is what Michael is. And when she has a social worker moment with this girl who just rolled out of bed, but she can be open to her, I'm like, come on, Ayana, like find the persons that like will give you the nourishment to like be a good mom for this baby. I'm so sorry that you didn't have a dad. I'm so sorry that you wanted that, you know, like I get it. And I can see like how you made bad choices up to now, but you know it too, babe. You are seasoned now. We have been on God's green earth. You didn't get the anesthesiologist thing. And that seemed like it was 20 years ago. So we know you've been on God's green earth doing this thing for a second. This is the moment of the show where I'm like, this feels incredibly real. And it feels like I want so badly for there to be like a good ending to this. And I hope to God there is. And I don't know.
Yeah. So I think the one thing that you're missing with that is Ayana's 27.
And she feels older.
Jamal is 37. And the first thing that we have with her besides her daughter is her saying something to Jamal about like her butt, like I can't wait for you to see this fat ass. And I'm thinking to myself like, girl, your priorities are all in the wrong place right now, but she thinks that it's the right way. And then we have like a too long conversation where she explains why inmates can't talk to each other directly and they have to use three-way calling. She only might go to prison for 14 days and she can't spend 14 days not talking to him. How about she tries to figure out how to talk to her kids, or at least her son, the older one that we haven't seen yet. And so she doesn't want to acknowledge that she has anger management. She says that she has an attitude. And she can get upset, you know, whatever. But this all stems from her having daddy issues. So there's that. And she has two phones for some reason. I saw that she had two phones when she got a phone call from her lawyer who said that the dates of all of her, her trial or her hearing got changed. And so she's upset because her mother specifically took off time on a Tuesday, not a Monday. And now this is going to make it so that she can't see Jamal or talk to him or something. And I, again, priorities all in the wrong way. And she keeps talking about having to be a superwoman. And I just think to myself, then slow down and stop making decisions that are going to put you in a position to have to be strong when they inevitably go wrong.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
And they will. Yeah,
they will. So, all right, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to us on today. If you guys want to listen and see us, you can join us on patreon.com/docusweeties for $10 a month. You get exclusive content such as a live every first Monday of the month. But if you can't do that, you know, there are other ways that you can support us, and Chris will tell you how.
Chris? Yeah, you can put your money in our commissary books.
We have a commissary book at commissarybooks.com/docusweeties.
Now you can just follow us on social media. You know what that situation's like. At docusweeties on Instagram, at docusweeties on TikTok, at docusweeties1 on X. We have a private Facebook group, the docusweeties podcast Facebook group. But mostly we also just need 5-star reviews. And we need 5-star reviews telling us that we're great, because, you know, some of these reviews don't say that we're great. They're not saying we're bad, but we're not saying we're great. They're saying we're great. A little bit of yes, a little bit of no. But we want to hear your opinion. It means a lot. So give us your ear, give us your tongue, give us your words. Other than that, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.